Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Last night, former presidential candidate Hillary Clinton was in Boston to discuss her book, What Happened, about the 2016 election that ended her political career and put Donald Trump in the White House. She also criticized current efforts by Republicans and the Trump administration to ram through a tax plan that she says favors the rich and explodes the deficit.
This is an abomination, and it should be protested against every way that we can.
WBUR's senior political reporter Anthony Brooks was there at the Clinton event and joins us now. Hello, Anthony.
Hey, Meghna.
Okay, so Hillary Clinton's been on this book tour. It's been going on for a couple of months now. What is she saying, or what did she say last night about 2016, and how was she received, by the way?
Well, in terms of how she was received, this is Massachusetts, where voters voted 2-1 in favor of Clinton over Trump. In Boston, they voted almost 6-1 in favor of Clinton. So as you can imagine, very friendly audience. There was a tiny protest outside of pro-Trump supporters. I counted 5 people in that crowd. No, big, enthusiastic event. And what she talked about is what happened in 2016, which she described as a perfect storm. And this is written about in her book, What Happened. She said there were deep currents of anger and resentment flowing through the culture. She also blamed Russia for waging information warfare against her campaign. She also blamed the weaponization of information on social media, the FBI for intervening in the campaign just days before the election, and she blamed the political press for, she said, focusing obsessively on her emails and too little on Donald Trump's lies. So here's a bit of what she said about how the political media dropped the ball.
I thought at some point there would be a real reckoning with the reckless, untruthful claims that were being made by my opponent, and he would say anything. People would cover it for like 24 hours, but then he'd say something else, and they'd, you know, chase that rabbit. But I thought at some point somebody on the interviewing side would say, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense, or explain what you mean. It never happened.
It never happened. Clinton called this the first reality TV campaign. She said Trump was the first reality TV candidate, and she called herself the candidate of reality. And her point was Trump was more interesting, more entertaining to cover, while she was often criticized for being boring because she wanted to do things like talk about policy. So that's part of her analysis of what happened.
Interesting. So we're here now, though, in this moment where there's this other massive cultural story going on, this parade of powerful men being accused of everything from sexual harassment to sexual assault. I mean, it happened to her husband, and people are saying that maybe liberals ought to rethink their support of Bill Clinton. I mean, did she bring any of that up at all?
No, she didn't, and she wasn't asked about that, and I wish she had been, because it would have been an interesting question. She was interviewed by a very friendly Tim McCarthy from Harvard, who made it clear that he was a huge Clinton supporter. So he avoided difficult questions about that or about whether Clinton herself made mistakes that contributed to her own defeat last November. I would like to have heard a question or two about that. But she did talk about how sexism works across society in politics and business and academia. And for example, she said for men, success and likability go hand in hand. But for women, it's the opposite. The more ambitious and successful they are, the less they are liked. And she suggested that's certainly one of the things that plagued her campaign. And she suggested that it's a challenge across society and in politics.
The only way we will get sexism out of politics is to get more women into politics.
Is that Hillary Clinton's call to action there?
Yeah, it certainly sounded like it. I mean, she made it clear that she won't be a candidate again, but she will remain engaged in the political debate. You know, she started an organization. It's called Onward Together, urging women to get involved in politics and to run. She's urging Democrats to do a better job organizing and build the kind of political structures that have been so helpful for Republicans. She also, Meghna, talked thoughtfully about one aspect of modern-day campaigning that frustrated her. Once upon a time, a politician like her would walk the rope line after an event, shake hands, or greet voters in a diner, talk to them, and really hear their stories. But Clinton said one of the reasons that's not happening anymore is because of, guess what? Everyone's there with their cell phones. What do they want?
A selfie?
A selfie.
Huh.
So here's what she said. She's there. She's on the campaign trail. She's dying to talk to these voters. And here's what happens.
Give me some insight into your life. Why are you here? What do you need from a president or a senator? Instead, it's, can I take a selfie?
Yeah.
And you know no more about that person after that click is done. And everybody's really happy to have their selfie. And, you know, the pictures are not that great, but, you know.
So, Meghna, a moment ago, Nancy Gertner was talking about how cell phones are sort of redefining some of these legal realities. Here's another example of how a cell phone has redefined the relationship between voter and candidate. I just found that very interesting.
Interesting. That is not something I'd ever thought of.
Yeah, I haven't either, but I've seen it. I mean, you do people line up, and they're not lining up to say to the candidates, hey, listen to my plight. What are you going to do about this? My kid is sick. I can't afford health care. They're lining up to wordlessly stand up one after the other and be photographed with their smartphone with the presidential candidate.
Fascinating to hear from the candidates, from Clinton's perspective.
Yeah.
There. Now, of course, so just to go back for something you said a second ago, you mentioned that this was a very receptive audience. What did they say?
Well, they loved her, hugely supportive audience, as you've heard in the clips. Clinton talked about how she's always had to be restrained and guarded as a politician and a candidate. But last night she said, those days are over. And she did come across as unshackled to a certain degree, more expressive, maybe more personal. And lots of folks seem to respond to that. Here's Susan Truly of Lexington, who talked a little bit about what she heard last night.
I thought she was dynamite. I thought if some of that personality came through a little bit more on the campaign trail, along with her strong policies, maybe we wouldn't have the circumstance we have today.
So I found Susan Truly interesting. I mean, I'm struck by how many politicians will say after they get out of the game, it's good to be able to be unshackled and expressive. I mean, I heard that, for example, from Al Gore after he lost in 2000. We even heard it from Charlie Baker after his first loss.
Yeah.
And he ran again and said, I'm going to be more myself. So it's curious to me how many politicians know the value of being real, but are still hesitant to really run as an authentic person. And as you know, I think arguably that's one of the things that afflicted Hillary Clinton.
Oh, this is so complicated. This is worth another 15 minutes, Anthony, because you can make the argument that on the one hand, Clinton, because she's a woman, could not afford to take the risk of being unshackled during the campaign. On the other hand, I think it's a totally legitimate criticism of her to say that she, for a long time, has been very calculating, very, very unwilling to take those kinds of emotional risks. I mean, remember from the 08 election, that famous tear that she shed in New Hampshire was like a breakthrough moment for her.
It's a great point. And one of the points she made yesterday about sexism and how it pervades the overall economy is that someone like her, a woman who is successful, ambitious, that actually mitigates against her likability. Whereas if you're a male candidate and you're successful and you're ambitious, that makes you more likable. So she was in a tough spot.
Yeah.
There's no question about it.
But I also do think there's credence to the criticism that no matter what, she wasn't the kind of person who maybe was willing to take emotional chances on the campaign trail. But anyway, we just got a minute here to go, Anthony, and I want to tap your expertise on another race that's going to happen next year in Massachusetts. Governor Charlie Baker has announced his reelection campaign 11 months to go. Your take?
Well, at this point, you'd have to say things look pretty good for Charlie Baker. He remains probably the most popular governor in the nation, if not the most popular. You know, he's one of those rare Republicans who knows how to work with Democrats. Statehouse Democrats seem to like him. They barely utter a bad word about him. He's got $7 million in his campaign war chest. Meanwhile, three Democrats, Seti Warren, Jay Gonzalez, and Robert Massey, have less than 100,000 between them. And early polling suggests they're still struggling to break through. It's early times, but this is a state that usually votes for Democrats. I wouldn't say the race is over, but you got to say Charlie Baker looks like he's in a pretty strong position.
Yeah, it votes for Democrats, but it definitely also likes its Republican governors.
No
as well.
Question about it.
Yeah. WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks, thank you as always, Anthony.
My pleasure.
Well, let's turn now to some news about Garrison Keillor, creator and former host of A Prairie Home Companion. Minnesota Public Radio has terminated its contracts with Keillor after learning of alleged inappropriate behavior he's allegedly had with someone he worked with. Minnesota Public Radio has retained an outside law firm to conduct an independent investigation of the allegations and will change the name, they say, of A Prairie Home Companion. The current version is now hosted by Chris Thiele. Earlier today, NBC News announced it fired anchor Matt Lauer after receiving a detailed complaint about alleged inappropriate sexual behavior on his part. Well, earlier today, Here and Now host Robin Young spoke with NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik about it.
Let's start with Keillor. He wrote an email to the Minnesota Star Tribune. We'll post that article. We'll get that at hereandnow.org. He wrote, "I put my hand on a woman's bare back. I meant to pat her back after she told me about unhappiness, and her shirt was open." I'm picturing one of those curtain shirts that opens down the back. "And my hand went up about 6 inches. She recoiled. I apologized. I later sent her an email of apology. She said she'd forgiven me." Then he wrote, "He heard from the lawyers." What do you make of this?
You know, it's one side of the story. Right. And the other side of the story is that the parent company of Minnesota Public Radio, which still has dealings with Keillor, even though he's no longer been the host for about a year of Prairie Home Companion, said that they were terminating all ties and that they would be pulling all of their old episodes featuring him and pulling Writer's Almanac and renaming this, you know, taking a bunch of serious steps here.
Yeah.
We don't know how serious this is. We also know this is a charged moment and that this event might have been dealt with differently in a different age. And maybe that would have been more in scale with what occurred, or maybe that would have been essentially sweeping something under the rug that showed a deeper disrespect for working with colleagues.
Well, people are looking a lot closer at the op-ed that Keillor wrote in the Washington Post yesterday defending Senator Al Franken, who, of course, has been accused of improper conduct. And there was that mock groping photograph of Leanne Tweeden. Keillor wrote, you know, "So Al ogled Miss Tweeden, pretended to grab her. A picture was taken. 11 years later, she's a talk show host. She goes public. There's talk of resignation. This is pure absurdity." It sounds like we're going to maybe have a new voice here. Defending?
Looking in retrospect at that, it looks different to look at that defense of fellow Minnesotan Al Franken, the senator now. Keillor this morning, I'm told by a friend of mine, he forwarded this, that this morning on Writer's Almanac, Keillor read aloud a poem about a bear. "Bear is chasing me through a meadow. I'm running as fast as I can, but he's gaining on me. It seems he's always gaining on me." And then at the end of the poem, he says, "We both know you're not going to catch me. All you can ever do is chase me. So think about it. Why bother?" Mm-hmm. In this case, if this was something Keillor already knew about, it looks like the bear caught him.
Well, either that or, as he said in his defense, this isn't me. As everybody knows, I was the stone statue on that show. I never hugged anybody. So who knows? But Matt Lauer, this news was announced by Today co-host Savannah Guthrie, who was in tears, and apparently the staff had just found out. NBC chair Andrew Lack said there was a complaint of sexually inappropriate behavior at work and added, "It's the first in 20 years at NBC News against Lauer, but we were presented with reason to believe it may not have been isolated." They tied that firing to a woman coming to them on Monday, but now reports have surfaced that other outlets, Variety, The New York Times, have been doing investigating for weeks. Did NBC know?
What I'm told is that NBC was aware that the New York Times and that Variety had been doing reporting, in part because they had heard about it from some of the women and colleagues that those news outlets had contacted, but that neither Variety nor the New York Times had yet been in touch formally with the networks to say, "Here's some specifics we want to talk about. We need some comment." So they had not been formally notified of the stories by those outlets. They weren't sure, you know, in what form those stories would take, or even if 100% of those stories would ever see the light of day.
Look, Garrison Keillor wrote in that email to the Star Tribune, "Well, you know, I've had a great run, you know, and so be this." He's denying it, and so be it. I've had a great run. But what about Lauer? Do you think this is the end of his career?
It would appear to be shattering. You know, people resurface. America is the home of the second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth chances in life. Scandal certainly didn't stop Donald Trump from entering the White House. And there are accusations, I might add, outstanding against him from multiple women who came forward by name. And that hasn't seemed to have prevented the president from wanting to go about his business. But, you know, Matt Lauer was in some ways the most important figure on NBC News. He was paid over $20 million. He led the most important show for its finances. And I don't think we're going to be seeing him in mainstream TV anytime soon.
That show made a couple hundred million and paid for the news. NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik, thank you so much.
You bet.
That conversation with Here and Now's Robin Young. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston. We'll be right back.